seen quite widely that I was a Christian priest and set about converting me. It was an experience of dialogue at the grassroots level. He was very clear indeed about the arguments that he had to advance, and he wanted to have some simple answers to them. He wanted to know, for example, why it was not absolutely obvious to me that since Jesus had lived before Muhammad, why I should regard Jesus as the seal of prophecy rather than Muhammad, and so forth. We had a very lively taxi journey, but I have to tell you that at the end of it, neither of us had moved very far from where we started, as you might guess. But what I wanted to pick up from that experience was the sense that we can sometimes have, even in a rather confrontational approach to dialogue, the sense we can sometimes have that questions are being asked that we wouldn't have thought of for ourselves. And in the process of trying to tackle those unexpected questions, we discover ourselves in a fresh way. What I experienced in the taxi was not exactly dialogue, and I'm afraid probably all too many of us have had experiences of encounters which have not quite been dialogue, where somebody has been very, very persuaded where they should start and simply can't see why anyone should ever start anywhere else. But what's distinctive about dialogue is, I would say, the notion it embodies of a conversation that continues. A lot of the engagement between Christians and Muslims across the centuries has certainly been engagement, to use the word that was picked up earlier, sometimes conciliatory, sometimes confrontational. But it's not all that often moved towards dialogue. Sometimes it's been polemic. That is, a dialogue which is set up in order to show you that you were wrong. And in both our traditions, there are pieces of dialogue between a Christian and a Muslim, which are in fact set up to move towards a particular conclusion. It's not even, though, dialogue, a matter of simple debate. That is, propositions advanced, contested, argued for and against. And it's in the awareness of that that I use the term dialogue in connection with this notion of discovery. Let me speak as a Christian for a moment. There will be echoes, I know, in Muslim minds, but I'll begin from where I stand. A very significant part of the Christian tradition, especially the Christian mystical tradition, is the conviction that you will never have said enough about God. If God is infinite, then you will never run out of things to say, and you will never come to a point where you can say all that has to be said about God has now been said. Our speech about God brings us constantly to the edge of a mystery which is at one and the same time dark and even alarming, because it throws out all our preconceptions, and yet also inviting, because we know that it's a mystery of endless love and invitation. Welcome. So that the process of talking about faith, for Christians who have inherited that particular strand of Christian reflection, the process of talking about faith is always a process of coming to the point where you look into a mystery. Your words you believe are true, and yet they are not a truth that allows you to say there's no more to discover. So the Christian is engaged constantly in moving into the endless mystery, moving out from a complacent and self-defensive security in faith, in the trust that the mystery that lies ahead is a mystery of welcome and love. In that pilgrimage, every single human life has something to contribute to our awareness. Because in every single human life, we see something of how the infinity of God's mystery winds itself into the mystery of a human life, a human personality. Every human face, made in the image of God, so we believe as Christians, reflects something of that mystery. Every human face is worth attending to. Every human voice is worth hearing. How much more so when you see another human face and hear another human voice directed towards God? The language that that other person uses about God may not be the language you use. You may disagree and find areas of enormous strangeness between you. And yet you will still want to say, in that attention to the other, I will discover something of God. The image that I repeatedly used in speaking about dialogue at its best is that it is a process where I try and look at another person's face turned towards God. Looking at another person's face turned towards God. Not turned towards me in sort of rapid, perhaps adversarial relationship, but to look at someone else as they pray, as they absorb the reality of God, and then to speak and listen with them. That's the first, and to me, the most fundamental aspect of dialogue for me as a Christian. I don't enter into dialogue with any primary intention of persuading, changing, but with the hope of growing. And there, perhaps, is a crucial distinction. I suspect that in my conversation with a taxi driver, both of us would simply like the other one to change, or at least to shut up. There might have been perhaps a longer conversation had we had a longer taxi journey, in which we both accepted that we had some growing to do. Now, I grow as I attend to and absorb what somebody else sees and hears as they turn towards God, above all, another person of faith, of conscious faith. But I grow also as I learn more about myself and my own convictions. And that, I suppose, is one of the areas where dialogue becomes difficult and challenging. A great deal of supposed interfaith dialogue, not to mention a great deal of what once used to be called comparative religion as a subject of study, in fact, misses its target completely. Because it doesn't begin by seeing that people are asking different questions. When I see some of the great classics of comparative religion of a certain kind, whether it's the work of Professor John Hick or Father Hans Kuhn, my worry is that these are people who are eager to persuade everybody that their differences don't really matter in the way they thought they did, and that everyone is really asking the same questions, and that it ought to be possible to find the same answers. But of course they're not asking the same questions. And one of the most revealing moments in the dialogues I've been involved in the last few years was sitting across a table from Mona Siddiqui, one of the Building Bridges seminars, Mona fixing me very intently with her gaze and saying, "So what do you mean by salvation?" It's a moment when you realize that the categories slip off the tongue for a Christian are not the questions that a partner in dialogue may be asking. What must I do to be saved may be a Christian question. I doubt very much whether it's a natural Muslim question, let alone a Hindu question or a Buddhist question, where the question might be, what do I do to be released? Which is a slightly different category. My point is simply that in dialogue, I start questioning my own questions. I look at myself and say, well, is that the obvious, the only way of asking the question? How do I listen to someone else's questions and see see how I relate to them. I discover, in other words, in dialogue, the things that are not necessarily at the forefront of my mind. I discover something beyond what suits my comfort zone. I may discover resources within my own language that I didn't suspect, and I may discover tensions in my own language that I didn't suspect as I listen and absorb from another. So the worthwhileness of dialogue is for me not only a matter of learning more about God, as I've said, but learning more about what I have understood of God and where I stand in relation to God. I discover something of God, I discover something of myself. I discover that I have not yet mastered all that could be said about God and never shall. I discover that the ways in which I have been talking about God need more probing, more querying, more deepening. To go back to the taxi once again. I suspect that at the very simplest level, for most Christians who first encounter a real discussion with Muslims, the sort of question that the taxi driver put to me about chronology is not something that would have occurred to them. For Muslim, it is often very clear that the fact of the succession of prophets settles the matter. Here is the end of the story. Here is the climax. Not in Jesus, but in Muhammad. That's not how the Christian sees it. So the Christian is forced to say, how do the resources in what I say begin to address that question? It's a real question. I may find things in my own tradition which help me with that. The ongoing conversation may bring more to light. Listen, react, explore, discover. Both our faiths, of course, are missionary faiths. We believe that the truth we have been given by God is a truth that can transform any and every human life in any and every human situation. And precisely because we have that in common, it's not always easy to find a space that we can inhabit together. And yet it's just that passion for a universal truth and for the human equality and interconnectedness that goes with that recognition of universal truth. It's just that which makes us recognize in one another the same impulse, the same seriousness. That too is part of what grounds, makes sense of the dialogue we want to pursue. Of course, we must admit this. That wonderful. Each of us, in proportion to how serious we are about our faith, longs for others to share it. But the point about dialogue is that we are, so to speak, bracketing for a moment the desire that someone else should share, fully identify with us, and taking the time necessary to explore one another and discover one another in the hope that something of God and ourselves is discovered in that moment. So dialogue is a very specialized kind of talk. A conversation without too many tight definitions of what a good outcome would be. And that's not easy to defend sometimes in our world. You probably notice this. What's the point of dialogue, people say, if it isn't to convert your dialogue partner? Why are you wasting your time? And because we live in a culture which is impatient, short-termist, and very much focused on measurable outcomes, you will always find people who will say to you, in respect of Christian-Muslim dialogue, how do you measure it? How do you measure its success? And if you say, well, I'm not going to measure its success by how many people change from one side to the other, some people may want to go off. Say it's not worthwhile. So, I believe that those of us who are committed to dialogue need to say very clearly that the worthwhileness of it is in that deepening of discovery that occurs with it. It is one of the many means that God gives us, one of many means God gives us to sink more deeply into the infinity of God's work, God's presence, God's purpose. It needs no justification other than that. If it becomes primarily an argument that somebody has to win, or primarily a negotiation for something we're all agreed about, it's much less than it can be. I want to suggest that understood as a means of discovery, a God-given means of discovery, it actually brings us up against a greater and fuller awareness of the sheer mystery of the God with whom we all have to do. And thus, instills in us a deeper gratitude that the mysterious, infinite God who surrounds and pervades everything that is has nonetheless spoken a word to us which changes us. Now, the change that is wrought in us by the gift and revelation of the infinite God is what we begin from in gratitude and acknowledgement. And in recognizing that gift and that mystery, we find our appetite kindled, our taste for the truth awakened. And so we turn to one another, looking and listening, confidently praying that in that encounter we grow. I don't know whether I shall ever again meet my Oxford taxi driver, who would, I think, be very surprised to discover that he had become the main subject matter of an address at Lambeth Palace. But I pray that, however much that conversation felt like an exchange of misunderstandings, we may both have grown just a tiny bit in that encounter. And the very fact that I'm telling you the story of that encounter now is partly to illustrate my own experience of being brought up against what I didn't know in a conversation. And that surely is a very significant aspect of dialogue, our discovery that we don't know even what we don't know. And we must, in attention and listening, find that out if God is to do with us what God wants to do with us.
Very much.